Let the Galaxy Burn. Narrated by a Border Prince. Children of the Emperor by Barrington J. Bailey. Hoarse screams and the screech of tortured hot metal filled the air. Massive laser blasts were punching into the spaceship. They superheated the air that men breathed, set fire to everything that could burn, and sent fireballs exploding through the crowded passageways. Imperial Guardsman Floskan Hartoum found himself in a crowd of jostling, panicking men. Minutes before, the men of the Aurelian 15th Regiment had been ordered to the armory to collect their lasguns and short swords in case the enemy should manage to teleport aboard. They would never reach the armory now. The crippled troopship, Emperor's Vengeance, was in a state of absolute chaos. Suddenly, a great howl of collective terror rose up. Down the corridor, a glowing, writhing red mass had appeared, rolling down the passageway towards them. Like the others, Floskan turned and ran. He had been at the back of the crowd. Now, he was at the front. Pushed from behind, he fell, then managed to get his legs under him and leapt. Behind him, he heard an automatic emergency bulkhead descend with a thump. Staggering to his feet, he found that he was alone in an empty section of corridor. He had been the only one to sliver under the bulkhead as he came down. Everyone else was trapped on the other side. Floskan stood, shaking, hearing the fireball slam against the steel partition, accompanied by the agonized shrieks of his comrades who were being incinerated. He pressed his hands to his ears to shut out the cries. The Emperor's Vengeance was old, centuries old. Guardsman Hartoum firmly believed that only the holy rituals carried out daily by the ship's priests kept it in one piece. But it was meticulously tended. The burnished metal ribs of the arch-roofed passageway gleamed. Effigies and efficacious runes, etched at various times by mechanics and priests, adorned the walls. But right now, Floskan was blind to all this. The dying screams of his comrades fading behind him. He stumbled to an oval porthole set in a brass surround and stared blindly out. He was looking into the star-strewn blackness of space. Unknown miles away, the sharp outlines of the attacking ships were visible. Even at this distance, they were an extraordinary sight. A motley collection had set of mongrelized and ramshackle craft, looking for all the galaxy as though they had each been constructed from two or three spacecraft, crudely welded together. They had set upon the flotilla of troop transports, clumsy barges only lightly armed, as it emerged from the warp to take its bearings. The result was utter carnage. The makeshift character of the ships identified their crews as orcs, who did not build spacecraft themselves, but used whatever they could capture or scavenge from other races. How they must have roared with savage delight to see units of the Imperial Navy materialize unsuspectingly before them. Now the flotilla's escorting battlecruiser, Glorious Redeemer, hove into view. A massive structure with Baroque, gargoyle-encrusted spires and weapons turrets which were gouting plasma as it attempted to defend the troopships. But it was heavily outgunned and had been taken by surprise. Half a dozen orc ships had surrounded it, and their armament was tearing it to pieces, great crenellated chunks spinning off into space. From another of the orc craft, something came flimmering. It was followed by a juddering shock that went right through the vitals of the Emperor's Vengeance with a roaring noise. The passageway buckled. From all around came the cacophony of a ship breaking up. They had been hit by a plasma torpedo. "Abandon ship! Abandon ship!" The order crackled through the antique ceiling speakers. Guardsman Hartoum, however, needed no prompting. He was already dashing for the nearest escape pods, scrambling over the newly made folds and rents in the floor. "Belay that order, guardsman. Fight to the end against the vile enemies of the Emperor." Flosken pulled up sharp. An intimidating figure in a black, square-shouldered long coat was standing stiffly at the corridor's next bend. It was the Commissar, Lamin Kanan. The grim expression beneath his peaked cap was nothing new. He wore it all the time, but especially during the fanatical morale-boosting lectures Flosken had been required to attend. The order to abandon ship had come from the captain. Flosken had no idea who ranked higher in this situation, captain or commissar, but he did know that if he obeyed the latter, he was unlikely to still be alive 1 minute from now. Instinctively, he moved to the nearby pod.
"You will not run in the face of the enemy, guardsman. Where is your lasgun?"
The last words were drowned out by an enormous squealing of metal being torn apart, followed by the terrifying hiss of air escaping from the ruptured hull. A lasgun suddenly appeared in Commissar Lamin Kanan's hand. Its lethal beam zipped past Hartum's ear as he hurled himself into the life pod. In the same motion, striking the rune-encrusted button that closed the hermetic seal, his hand trembled with panic. He pulled the lever to eject. Fragments rattled against the pod as it rocketed away from the disintegrating troopship. The fierce acceleration drained the blood from Flosken's brain, and he blacked out. When he came to, the total silence of the pod's close confines, in which there was barely room to move, was frightening. Even the sound of Flosken's breathing seemed unnaturally loud. He dragged himself to the tiny porthole and peered out. If there was anything to be seen at all, it consisted of spread wreckage which occasionally drifted between himself and the stars, making them twinkle. The flotilla was destroyed, and with it the Aurelian 15th Regiment. Of the Orc ships, there was no sign. Guardsman Hartum fell back on the pod's couch, unable to bear the devastating sight. Aurelia, where Flosken had been raised, was an agricultural world. He had joined the founding Imperial Guard Regiment voluntarily, hoping for challenge and adventure. Now that he had found them, he was wishing for his quiet life back on the farm. He firmly believed in the Emperor, of course, but now he was beyond even his help. He was alone and lost. Rescue was impossible. The Navy would not even know where the flotilla had emerged from the warp. The pod would keep him alive for a few days. And then? It would have been better to have died alongside his comrades. Overcome with despair and even shame at his escape, Flosken buried his face in his hands and sobbed for a while. Then he took a grip on himself. He was an Imperial Guardsman, he told himself. The Emperor would expect him to keep up his courage, no matter how bad things became. He steeled himself to face death calmly. Eventually, some dread curiosity drew him back to the porthole. He felt compelled to look again into the void, which was to be his grave. When he did, he gasped, his jaw hanging. There was a planet below him. Flosken Hartum's heart was beating wildly, thoughts racing through his brain. The planet might have a poisonous atmosphere, it might hold deadly horrors, or it might offer a chance of survival. Though he would be marooned for life. It was beautiful too, with dazzling blue oceans and shining white clouds. The pod could already be falling towards the planet, or it could be in orbit around it, but most likely it was on a course that would take it out of range and unable to reach the shining world. Hartum would have to act quickly. He studied the simple controls. Escape pods were manufactured cheaply in huge numbers and were best described as crude. Flosken's training and their use had lasted less than 20 minutes, and he barely knew what to do. Luckily, there was little to understand. There were none of the glowing icons and shining runes that would have embellished more sophisticated equipment. Instead, there was included, in the moulding of the control panel, a simple prayer to the Emperor. Fortins terribilitas, adjuva me in extremis. Mighty terribilitas, aid me in my plight. Fervently muttering the prayer, he took hold of the control levers. The gyro whined, rotating the pod to point its snub nose at the luminous world. The small rocket engine fired again, drawing on the scant amount of fuel. Flosken was sent hurtling into the planet's atmosphere. Despite it being his only way to see outside, Flosken dug down the porthole's cover once the buffeting began. He wasn't sure the glassite would be able to withstand the heat that would be generated by the friction of the atmosphere. The rocket engine had soon run out of fuel and was silent. Escape pods were supposedly to be able to land on a planet automatically, but like everything else about them, the arrangements were rudimentary at best. Escape for defeated guardsmen was scarcely high on the Imperium's list of priorities, and Flosken began to feel there was something wrong. Strapped into the acceleration couch, he was being spun around wildly, tossed up and down, and jerked from side to side. It was getting very hot too, making him wish he had cut off the rocket engine sooner. He had hit the atmosphere at too high a speed. The pod's outer layer was supposed to absorb heat and then shed it by peeling away in fragments, but how thick was it? When it was all gone, he would be roasted alive. So violent became the descent that Flosken passed out again. When he next opened his eyes, he did not know how much later, everything had become still. A breeze was on his face. He could hear a distant chirruping sound, as of unknown animal calls. He had landed. The acceleration couch had been torn from its moorings and his face had struck the control panel. He threw off the restraint straps and felt his aching cheek. It was bleeding. Automatically, he consulted the survival meter under the mangled panel. It told him the planet had a breathable atmosphere, but then he already knew that, because he was already breathing the local air. Evidently, the pod had cracked open on impact. He could see daylight through the gaping rent. His limbs seemed to be made of lead, and he was finding it difficult to move, making him fearful of having internal injuries. Several times, he struck the rune-inscribed button that should have opened the hatch, but it was stuck. Then he tried to undo the hatch manually. The frame was warped, and he was unable to shift it. Finally, panting with effort, he attacked the rent in the pod's side, placing his feet on one edge and bracing his back against the stanchion. The surprisingly thin shell of the pod moved, making a gap large enough for him to squeeze through. He tried to stand up, but found that he couldn't. He had no internal injuries. It was simply that his body weighed 3 or 4 times more than it normally would. He was on a heavy gravity planet. How could he survive if he couldn't even stand up? Guardsman Khartoum struggled to come to his feet. Using his arms, he managed to push himself to a squatting position. Then he heaved with all the strength he could muster in his legs until he thought the blood vessels would burst. God Emperor, aid me. Grimacing with effort, Flosken came upright, shaking, feeling the gravity drain him of muscle power and tried to drag him down. How long could he maintain himself like this? He looked around him. The sky was shining, metallic blue-grey, casting the landscape in a sinister glow. The terrain consisted of rocky crags and low hills, to which clung shrub-like trees and crimson reeds. Although it was a dismal, depressing environment, over which there seemed to hang a feeling of menace. The escape pod had cracked open on striking a rocky outcropping. Thick white parachute cords straggled from it, but the parachute itself had been torn off sometime during the descent, though presumably not far from the surface or the impact would have killed him. A stiff, cold wind was blowing, making Flosken shiver. Grey clouds raced overhead. He felt dizzy, whether from the blow to his head or because the heavy gravity made it difficult for blood to reach his brain. He did not know. And he felt frightened, filled with foreboding. It was hard to believe that only yesterday he had been cursing the monotony of the space journey to an equally unexciting posting. He was about to sit down again and rest when a hoarse shout made him turn around. He was standing at one end of a shallow valley. Charging along it towards him was a troop of about 20 men. They were massively muscled, evidently well adapted to the heavy gravity, with shaggy hair which streamed behind them in the wind. Some brandished spears, others raised bows, and were whipping arrows from quivers strapped to their backs. And they were heading straight towards him. Death now seemed both certain and sudden, and all of Guardsman Flosken Hortum's gloom and uncertainty cleared from his mind. He was defenceless. Escape pods carried no lasguns, which were too expensive to waste on men with little or no chance of survival. He doubted if he could run at all, let alone outdistance his pursuers, and if he took refuge in the pod, he would only be left trapped like an animal. He took a deep breath. Best take it like a soldier of the Aurelian 15th. He would go down fighting with his bare hands. But perhaps there was better than that. A flung spear clattered on the rock to his left. He managed to take a few steps, squatted down and lifted the thick wooden shaft off the ground. It was incredibly heavy in his hands, but somehow he heaved himself erect once more and turned to face the enemy, the spear point held before him. If he could take just one of the attackers with him, he would have died with honour. Another spear came hurtling by, together with a flock of arrows, but the aim was poor and all missed him by a wide berth. There seemed to be something strange about the oncoming natives' gait. As they came close enough for him to make them out clearly, he saw that he had been mistaken about them. They were not men at all. They were four-footed aliens. Seen from the front, they looked human enough, clad as they were in short smocks of coarse cloth belted at the waist, but from the side or the rear, it was a different matter entirely. Their lower back and rump were sloped and extended, and were supported by a second pair of legs. These were just like the front legs, except that they were shorter, almost stubby. Both pairs seemed to work in unison, so that the creature ran with a swift but swaying gait. The strange spectacle startled Flosken. The introductory address at his regiment's founding flashed through his mind. "You will be fighting aliens, mutants, monsters, heretics, all things abominable to the Emperor." Now, he was to die in fulfilment of those words. But instead of rushing straight at him, the troop thundered past. It was charging not at Flosken, but at something else. Flosken turned to look and dropped his spear, paralysed with shock. The quadruped aliens had been shouting warnings, not threats. The valley ended in a craggy hill, like many littering the broken landscape. Emerging from the brow was a monster combination of lobster, crab, and armoured centipede, but of stupendous size. It almost covered the hill over which it was clambering, its bossed shell scraping on the rock, hissing sounds issuing from its oscillating mouthparts. As it descended, a giant claw reached out to seize the escape pod, crushing it like an eggshell before dropping it again. The same claw reached for Flosken. He staggered back, struggling to maintain his footing. Yelling battle cries, the natives sent spears and arrows clattering against the shiny carapace. They were aiming at the monster's soft parts, waving eye stalks and the broad, dripping mouth that could have taken them all in one go. Stone axes hacked at the claw that was about to pick up Flosken. Chitin splintered. Purple ichor flowed and gouted. The limb was severed and lay twitching. It was incredible to Flosken that the natives could take on this gigantic, fearsome beast with their primitive weapons. And yet they were winning. Two staring golden eyes were transfixed by arrows, a third by a sphere. Hissing and screeching, the monster retreated and crawled back over the hill to whoops of victory from the four-footed warriors. Now, their attention turned to Flosken. The leader, a fierce-looking individual with fiery red hair and beard, turned to him and bellowed an order in a guttural, unintelligible language. A second quadruped dashed forward and seized Flosken, flinging him violently across his well-muscled, smock-covered back and holding him there in a vice-like grip. The whole troop turned and raced back the way it had come, knocking the breath out of Flosken with every pace. Once again, he had been snatched from the jaws of death. Once again, more likely, to face something worse. He was in the hands of aliens. Once through the valley, Flosken managed to raise his head and was able to see just how strange and dangerous a world he had come into. It was a nightmare world with its glaring sky, tumbled landscape and gigantic life forms. The crab centipede monstrosities seemed to be everywhere, ambling aimlessly in search of food. The quadrupeds managed to avoid them, but apparently there were more terrifying threats to their existence. They slowed before they had got very far, spreading out and jinking nervously. Flosken spotted what he thought at first was a factory smokestack, rearing high in the air in the distance, such as might be seen in Aurelia's industrial zone. It even belched smoke, or perhaps it was steam, and gave off vague hooting sounds. But it was not a factory chimney. It was alive, it was flexible, and it was bending over, its reeking mouth swooping across the terrain towards the troop. The quadrupeds scattered, taking cover in rock crevices. From there, Flosken watched in fascination. Briefly, he saw a ring of eyes around the chimney's circular rim as it picked off a crab centipede. The monster was sucked, struggling, into the tube as it whipped upright once more, presumably to be drawn into its enormous stomach. Cautiously, the quadrupeds set off once more. Once out of reach of the stack beast, they sought high ground. Flosken was puzzled as to why they would expose themselves so, but from the vantage point of a craggy ridge he got the answer. The low ground was dotted with a terrifying type of plant-like animal, a house-sized bulb vaguely resembling a cactus, from which spread dozens of wriggling, searching tentacles radiating in every direction. Any edible animal they found was whipped back to be devoured. A quadruped, or anything roughly the size of a man, would have stood no chance trying to cross that deadly network. Flosken's mind whirled. Just how many alien horrors did this planet have to offer? Suddenly, the quadrupeds seemed out of place, as if they did not really belong here. They were like hapless insects, ready to be picked off by a host of larger creatures. But he could think no more, only concentrate on the agony of his rough ride on the back of the native. Though he dreaded what awaited him, it was almost a relief when the quadruped's village came in sight. It was fortified with a 20-foot-tall hedge, bristling with thorns and sharpened stakes. At a shouted signal, a section of hedge was dragged inwards, allowing them to enter. The scene within was a tumultuous throng of four-footed aliens surging among huts thatched with crimson reeds. A blazing fire burned in the centre of the compound, some sort of animal roasting over it on a spit. Flosken was tossed from his carrier and set on his feet, again struggling to stand against the dragging gravity. Great excitement greeted his arrival. The natives jostled with one another, rearing on their hind legs and uttering exultant cries. Hands grabbed Flosken and pulled him towards the fire. He shrank back, his face slack. Terror coursed through his every nerve. He was destined for the spit. He lost control of himself and began struggling desperately as the flame scorched his face. Suddenly, he was released. A chunk of smoking cooked meat, torn from the roasting carcass, was thrust into his hand. For all the ecstasy of relief he felt, Guardsman Flosken Horton discovered that he was hungry. He sniffed the meat. It smelled good. He bit, chewed, and then began to eat ravenously. The aliens cheered while he satisfied his hunger. Flosken glanced from side to side. What was in their minds? Were they toying with him, treating him well before killing him? He had heard that primitive tribes did that. How strangely human these aliens looked, if one did not look below the waist. True, they were of fierce appearance and were very broad set. Flosken, who thought of himself as a burly youth, felt positively slim beside them. And of course, he was as weak as a child compared with their rippling muscles. As he swallowed the last fragment of meat, the native suddenly fell silent. Their ranks parted to allow the passage of one who had emerged from a nearby hut. He walked slowly and with dignity on his four legs. His face was craggy with age, and his hair and beard were white. He halted before Flosken, regarding him with steady eyes. Then, to the guardsman's total surprise, he spoke, not in the unintelligible local speech Flosken had heard earlier, but in a strangled version of Imperial Gothic, so that he had to repeat his question twice before he made himself understood.
"Have you come to us from the Emperor?"
Flosken blinked. How could these primitives on an out-of-the-way planet speak Imperial Gothic and know of the God Emperor? Aware that his life might well depend on his reply, he thought for a moment and then spoke in a clear voice.
"Yes, I am a warrior of the Emperor."
The elder was clearly not impressed by these words. He looked Flosken up and down.
You, warrior? Warrior has weapons. Where are yours?
Too late, Flosken realized he hardly counted as a fighting man by these native standards. He waved his arms defiantly and became theatrical.
The Emperor sent me through the sky to fight his enemies. I was cast down to this land, but lost my weapons.
Then you were defeated,
the aged quadruped grunted. He beckoned.
Follow.
He turned and walked with his ambling gait back to the hut. Flosken tried to follow, but after only a few steps needed to be helped by another quadruped, who put out a beefy hand to support him. Inside the hut, the elder gestured to a reed pallet on the floor.
More comfortable lying down.
Thankfully, Flosken lowered himself to a sitting position. The old alien did likewise, folding both pairs of legs under him.
I am Oktar, the remembering one of our tribe. My duty is to remember the ancient histories. Make sure they are not forgotten.
Flosken could understand his thick accent a little better now, but the next words left him dumbfounded.
Do you bring us message from the Emperor? Is he going to take us into the Imperium and make us his children?
To Guardsman Houghton, such an idea was not only bizarre and sinister, it was also impossible. He had been raised in the Imperial cult, and his childhood beliefs had been given additional fire during his short time in the Imperial Guard. Already the Aurelian 15th Regiment had helped in the extermination of an alien race who, for a while, had shared their world with human colonists. Humans could not be expected to live indefinitely on a contaminated planet. He was grateful to the aliens for saving his life, but they were aliens.
It is the Imperium of Man, no?
Oktar insisted, when Flosken failed to answer.
We are men.
Flosken looked at the animal-like appearance of Oktar's lower body.
Men have two legs, he burst out without thinking. You have four.
Oktar sprang to his feet, glaring angrily.
We are humans with four legs.
Seeing that he had frightened Flosken, he calmed down and seated himself again.
Forgive my anger, emissary. It is right that you should probe and question. Let me explain. Our ancestors were like you, two legs. Like you, they travelled the sky, searching for new worlds on which to live. Instead, they crashed here and became stranded. That was many, many years ago. You have seen what sort of world this is. Where you come from, objects do not weigh very much, and one needs only two legs to stand up. Here, everything is heavy. Not only that, but our world is hostile to human life. The ancients who crashed here realized that they would not survive long, but they had powerful magic, and they used this to give their children four legs so that they could stand up. And they gave them stronger muscles so that they could fend for themselves. By this means, our people have conquered adversity and have lived for countless generations, even though we lost the ancient magic. Surely the Emperor will be pleased with us and bring us into his family.
Flosken fought hard. If there was any truth in this tale, then the quadruped's ancestors would have come from Mars. Those tech priests sent countless ships out into the galaxy during the Dark Age. And yes, they would have had the ability to alter genes in the way Oktar described as magic. But the tale was wildly improbable.
How did you learn the Imperial language? Flosken asked. How do you even know the Emperor?
You are not the first two legs to come here recently. Magson came. He wanted gemstones. In return, he gave us this. Try it on. It will help you.
Oktar stood and drew aside a curtain. He brought out something made of a rubbery material. Flosken's eyes widened when he saw it. It was a heavy gravity suit, designed to make life tolerable on just such a planet as this.
Magson stayed long enough for me to learn his language, Oktar continued. He told us about the Imperium and about the Emperor, who is our god. All our legends were confirmed. We entrusted him with a petition to the Emperor, asking for his rule and guidance. That was years ago. Since then, we have been waiting for you.
From the sound of it, Magson was a free trader. It was most unlikely he had even reported the existence of the quadrupeds to the authorities, let alone forwarded the petition to the Administratum on Terra. Usually, such traders heeded no one but themselves. Ploskin guessed he had the explanation of Oktar's claim to be human too. Oktar was obviously highly intelligent. To have learned Imperial Gothic from a passing stranger was no mean feat. But he must have concocted the myth on hearing of the marvels of the Imperium, perhaps confusing the Imperial cult with some tribal beliefs and so believing it himself.
"I can prove what I say," Oktar added then, as if reading his thoughts. "I will take you to the holy shrine of our ancestors. We will travel at night, when it is safer. Put on the cloth that takes weight away."
Ploskin accepted the high G suit Oktar handed to him, inspecting the runic icons on the shoulder tabs. He could see why the trader Magson had been so ready to trade it. The suit's power was low. Also, it seemed to be damaged, no doubt ready to cut out at any time. And just the same, he pulled it on and immediately felt relief from the crippling gravity. He stood up, stretched, and smiled. His smile vanished as he remembered that he was going to have to spend the rest of his life here. Oktar left him alone to let him rest. Ploskin spent the hours before darkness deep in thought. For about an hour, he became very depressed, realizing that he was never to see another human being again. Whatever life was left to him would have to be spent with these four-footed villagers. Without them, he had no chance of survival at all. Then, once again, he rallied and became determined to see things through. Some said the Emperor watched over all that he thought was worthy of the title of guardsman. He would prove his mettle. He was going to have to humour Oktar for the time being. It was essential that the quadrupeds accepted him. For the time being, he switched off the high G suit to conserve its power. Besides, he needed to build up his muscles. Eventually, he would need to withstand the dreadful gravity. Night fell abruptly, like a curtain. Soon, Oktar returned and explained the journey that lay ahead.
"We are going to visit the Temple of the Ancient Relics," he said. "It is deserted now, and we shall have to travel with caution, for it lies within the territory of the enemy."
"You have enemies?" Ploskin replied curiously. Oktar nodded curtly.
"The worshippers of the evil god of blood. Once they were our friends, but not now."
He would say no more, and Ploskin turned on the high G suit once more. Guards pulled the hedge gate open. They crept out, Oktar looking to the left and right. Within the defensive circle of the hedge, the fire was kept burning at all times, so that even at night the village had a cheerful look. Outside was an eerie darkness, relieved by a dim, silvery light cast by massive stars, though the sky boasted no moons. Ploskin soon learned that Oktar's description, safer at night, did not mean safe. When a living tangle of hooks and barbs the size of a small armoured vehicle flew at them, Oktar proved himself a master spearman, despite his age. Instead of trying to evade the barbs, he lunged straight at them and struck home. The raving mass jerked wildly from side to side, then slumped. He had penetrated the creature's tiny brain. Oktar brushed a dozen sharp hooks from his skin, ignoring the trickling blood.
"They wait around villages hoping to catch children who stray," he said. "They're not much to worry about."
Oktar knew his world well. He took Ploskin on a wandering route that avoided the haunts of night predators, though Ploskin shivered to hear a chaos of grumbling, hissing, and clacking noises all around them. After a while, he evidently became dissatisfied with his companion's progress and invited him to climb on his back. With Ploskin clinging to him, he set off at a tireless gallop, the great shaft of his spear resting on his shoulder. Eventually, he slowed, setting Ploskin on his feet again. From then on, he proceeded carefully, sliding from cover to cover and looking carefully about him as he went. They came at last to a natural amphitheatre. At its bottom, a ruined stone temple glittered faintly in the starlight. Its shape was hard to make out. There was a circle of broken pillars, and within it the remains of a round building, which might once have been domed. It must have been thousands of years old. Alert from any savage beast, which might be using the temple as a lair, Akhtar approached carefully, but all was quiet. They stepped within the lichen-covered walls. The roof had long gone. Light from the star clouds streamed into the circular enclosure, revealing an unexpectedly wondrous display. Strange machines! Akhtar stood in silence, allowing Flosken to take in the wondrous view. This was indeed a holy place. Flosken felt as though he had been transported to the ancient, ancient past, to the dark age of technology and the days of the cult Mechanicus. Plainly, the machines had once been arranged with reverence so that they could be worshipped as a sacred shrine, but now they were scattered across the ruined chamber, some of them smashed to pieces while others had simply fallen apart. A few, however, appeared to be still intact, matte black surfaces gleaming, rectangular display screens reflecting the starlight. They were like no machines Flosken was familiar with, and their purpose was a mystery. But there was plain signs that they were designed to be operated by humans, in the form of keyboards, knobs, and slides.
"The ancient ones from the sky came to our world with these sacred objects," Akhtar told him in a hushed tone. "By these means they could work magic, though how we do not know."
Presumably the quadrupeds had thought better than to reveal the shrine to the trader Magson. He would certainly have wanted to take them away with him. They represented arcane sciences superior even to those of the present-day Imperium. The shrine machines might even contain examples of standard template construction, sought throughout inhabited space. And all this meant that Akhtar's claim was true. The quadrupeds were all human stock. During the two campaigns in which he had served, Flosken had seen abhumans. He had seen Ogryns and Beastmen, degenerate forms of human of low intelligence. He could not help but compare them with the noble Akhtar. But for his weird lower limbs, he was much more human than they had been. Furthermore, the physical differences had been arranged by the arts of the ancient tech priests, not left to the vagaries of evolution. Did they not, then, deserve the Emperor's recognition? Yes, they did. While these thoughts whirled through his brain, a drumming sound came to Flosken's ears. Akhtar heard it too. He capered round on all four legs, glaring, spear at the ready.
"Worshippers of the Blood God! We were seen, emissary! Hide yourself!"
A savage roar rose up all around them. Swarming down the slope of the amphitheatre was a spear-bearing, axe-waving mob of quadrupeds clad in shaggy animal skins or armour fashioned from the shells of the crab monsters. On their heads were helmets consisting of the emptied carapaces of smaller armoured creatures, complete with claws, or, in some cases, what appeared to be human skulls. By the silvery starlight, Flosken saw all this clearly through the gaps in the temple wall. When the quadrupeds got closer, he saw, even more clearly, why they could not be of Akhtar's tribe. Their faces were tattooed, transforming them into hideous masks. The good-natured ferocity of Akhtar's people was completely absent. Instead were the bestial snarls, hate-filled grimaces, and blood-curdling shrieks of those bent on wanton murder and destruction. Flosken shrank back at first, thinking to hide as he had been instructed, but when he saw the old remembering one dash from the temple, apparently determined to defend the Emperor's emissary to the last, he could not help himself. He looked around for something to use as a weapon. Now, the attackers were within the circle of pillars. Akhtar thrust his spear into the chest of the first to reach him, bringing the savage down. Flosken grabbed up a piece of fallen masonry, hefting it despite its weight, and ran to his aid. Akhtar had his back to one of the pillars, surrounded and sorely pressed. Flosken did not think he could throw the rock. It would simply fall from his hand. He ran forward and struck with all his might against the crab-protected head, aiming for the exposed cheekbone. The quadruped merely staggered a little and turned to give Flosken a look of outrage. Sour-smelling breath washed over Flosken from a snarling, tattooed and scarred face. He glimpsed a stone axe flashing down towards his skull. Then, the axe was miraculously stayed. Another warrior had deflected it. Instead, rough hands seized him. In that same moment, sheer weight of numbers overcame the struggling Akhtar, three spears lunging into him at once, his legs buckling, so that he was brought down like some magnificent animal by a yapping pack of predators. He turned piteous eyes to the struggling Flosken.
Tell the Emperor, we are human.
Then Flosken, held in a steely grip, was forced to watch in horror as with jubilant screeches the killers continued to hack and stab at the body of the remembering one, until it was nothing but a bloody mass. Eventually, leaving off their gruesome work, they turned to stare inquisitively at Flosken. As well as their elaborate tattoos, each face bore intricate tribal scars, so that it was difficult to discern any human features at all. Flosken stared straight back at the devilish masks, clenching his fists. For the moment, rage burned all the fear out of him. Ignorant savages had murdered a brave worshipper of the Emperor. If only he could deliver the full vengeance of the Imperial Guard on them. Mocking laughter arose among the quadrupeds. Did they perhaps regard him as a two-legged cripple, an object of mirth? While this went on, something else was afoot. Roaring warriors charged into the temple and began smashing the precious ancient relics. Others collected bundles of a dry, mossy material that grew nearby, piling it over the mysterious machines. A spark was struck from two fragments of stone, setting the floss alight. Soon, the machines themselves were burning, with a brilliant white, seething flame, forcing everyone out of the temple. Suddenly, there was a loud explosion and an enormous glare, bringing down the remains of the ruin and hurtling stone chunks into the crowd. Something amongst the machinery, perhaps long-dead fuel cells, had ignited. This turn of events seemed to scare the raiders. Flosken was dragged roughly onto a quadruped's back, and the whole pack set off with alarmed howls, scrambling up out of the amphitheatre and streaming into the darkness. The ride did not last long. The alien sun was rising when the village of the tattooed four legs came into sight. Like Oktar's, it was protected by a high thorn hedge, a section of which was dragged inwards to allow them to enter. Set on his feet, Flosken stared around him in fascination. There seemed to be a pattern to the quadruped settlements. Within the compound was the same circle of reed-thatched huts and a central fire. But here, the atmosphere vibrated with savagery and violence. Fighting was a way of life. Several brawls seemed to be happening at any one time. Except for females and the young, all faces were scarred and tattooed. Flosken's eyes were drawn to a huge totem pole towering over the huts near the central fire. Carved on it was a huge, crimson, maniacally glaring face, eyes bulging, teeth bared, seeming to radiate a lust for death and battle. The Blood God. Flosken was dragged into a nearby hut and tied by his hands to a rough wooden post. After his captors left, and his eyes grew accustomed to the gloom, he realized he was not alone. A second prisoner was slumped on the ground, tied to a wooden post, wearing a thick black greatcoat. It was Commissar Lemminkainen. For all his hunched, dishevelled state, crushed as he was by the excessive gravity, Commissar Lemminkainen was still formidable. His glinting, steely gaze directed itself at Flosken from beneath his peaked cap. Flosken realized that the heavy gravity suit hid his uniform.
"I am Guardsman Hortum, Commissar, from the Emperor's Vengeance," he said quickly. "Did you desert your post, Guardsman?"
Lemminkainen accused in a grating voice. Then, not waiting for an answer, he added,
"I, too, was on that ship. The last thing I remember is when the torpedo struck. Someone must have put me in an escape pod. I was already falling through the atmosphere when I regained my senses, with my las pistol missing from its holster. Do you have yours, Guardsman?"
It was a relief to Flosken that the Commissar did not remember trying to absolve a panicking trooper by executing him in the transport ship's last moments.
"No, Commissar, I'm unarmed."
Lemminkainen grunted. The Commissar seemed eager to explain his presence on the planet. Could he have thrown himself into an escape pod out of self-preservation, just as Flosken had? But then he would still have his las pistol, unless the quadrupeds had taken it from him, in which case they would have searched Flosken for one too, so he had to be telling the truth. Flosken felt ashamed to have doubted him. Lemminkainen was frowning at him, perhaps puzzled to see him in a HG suit.
"Did anyone but ourselves escape the battle?"
he asked sharply. Flosken shook his head.
"Not as far as I know. The entire flotilla was destroyed. The Aurelian 15th is gone. A sob came into his voice. I may be the only one left, and no one even knows where in space we came out of the warp.
You are an ignorant young fool, guardsman. We are deep inside a planetary system. Ships cannot emerge from the warp this close to a star, except by means of a known and charted warp gate. The Navy will be here to investigate when the flotilla fails to arrive. Not that you or I will benefit from it. We are in the hands of aliens of the most savage and perverted type. In the next few hours, they will torture us to death. You were lucky to have me with you. I will help you face the end with fortitude, keeping your faith in the Emperor.
Flosken gulped, impressed though he was by Lemminkainen's steadfastness.
Are you sure, Commissar? He whispered.
Of course I am sure. Have you seen that totem outside? I've seen that same imagery in half a dozen worlds. It is the emblem of a chaos god, the god of slaughter and destruction. These aliens are its devotees.
The blood god, Flosken murmured. That's what they call it.
Then you've heard of it too. Yes, the blood god. That's what it is called all across the galaxy.
But surely the Emperor is the only true god.
Flosken had heard stories about the chaos gods on Aurelia, but he had taken them to be fanciful superstitions. The Commissar's words sounded strange to him.
The Emperor is the only true god, but the chaos gods are real too.
Lemminkainen assured him.
They oppose the Emperor and are responsible for every evil and depravity. Here we have two enemies of the Emperor together, aliens and a chaos god.
Flosken could not contain himself.
These people are not aliens, Commissar. They are human, he cried out, and some of them worship the Emperor.
In a rush of words, he related everything that had happened since he was deposited on the planet, his rescue from the Crabmonster, the gift of a Hoi-Gi suit, how Oktar had proved his claim to be human. The Commissar listened closely, growing more and more astounded.
Standard template, he breathed in excitement. Are you sure it is all destroyed?
There can't be anything left after the fire and the explosion.
We shall see.
Flosken was not really concerned with that.
Will good tribes like Oktar's be admitted into the Imperium? He asked eagerly. After all, there are plenty of other abhumans.
Lemminkainen's voice rose in impassioned fury.
How many times must I tell you that you are a fool, guardsman? Ogryns and the like are natural human types. A human being with four legs is an abomination. It is a mutant, and a mutant is a child of chaos. It cannot be allowed to live.
His voice fell to an exhausted drone.
It is a good thing we have discovered this. We must try to leave a record for the investigators. There is nothing here but twisted human mutation and the taint of chaos. My report will recommend the cleansing of this entire planet.
Flosken sank into an appalled silence. Had the quadrupeds been listed as aliens, they would have been left alone. The Imperium could not exterminate every alien race in the galaxy, meritorious though that ideal was, but now he had doomed them to extinction. The heavy gravity was clearly too much for Lemminkainen. His frenzied speech seemed to have exhausted what was left of his strength. He fell into a fitful doze. Flosken was almost sorry he could not give him the Hoi-Gi suit for a while. The worshippers of the blood god did not seem to be in any hurry. After several hours, the crude door opened and a bearded, tattooed quadruped, smelling like a goat and wearing a jerkin made from the bristling porcupine-like skin, entered and raised a bowl of water to Flosken's lips. Glancing at the sleeping Commissar, he merely grunted and went out again. The next time the door opened, a throng of leering, mocking faces crowded around the opening, then drew aside to reveal the result of the morning's work. It was a large, oval container, shaped from clay. Flosken easily recognized it for what it was, an oven, able to take two men inside it. Beneath it was a fireplace, already piled with wood. Leering laughter greeted the look on Flosken's face as he stared at the thing. He and the Commissar were going to be baked alive. The closing door shut out the horrid, grimacing faces. Shortly, it began to grow dark again. The brief day was ending, and outside it was growing quiet as the worshippers of the blood god retired to their huts. Floskin could guess that the grisly death rite, undoubtedly a sacrifice to their foul blood god, was scheduled for the next day. Leaning, trembling against the post to which he was tied, he began thinking with terror of the excruciating death which was shortly to come upon him. Then he started thinking of his comrades of the Aurelian 15th, who had suffered hardly less painful deaths on the Emperor's vengeance. Some had been personal friends, back in his home district of Aurelia. He stopped shaking. Resolve formed in him. He owed a duty to his dead comrades, to his superior officer, Commissar Lemminkainen, and a debt of gratitude to Oktar and his people. He had to change Lemminkainen's mind about them, and above all, he wished to avoid the clay oven. All day Floskin had been working on his bonds, with little effect. Now an idea came to him. The Hygie's suit had metal ribs with squared-off edges. He worked the braided cord to one of these and began to rub. It was slow work, but in the end his patience was rewarded. The hut was in near darkness when he had worn down the cord enough so that he could break it. Finally, he stood unfettered and glanced at the sleeping form of Commissar Lemminkainen. Briefly, he considered trying to take the Commissar with him before realizing that it would be impossible. Lemminkainen's only hope, and it remained a faint one, was for Floskin to bring help. He slipped from the hut, moving with the stealth of a shadow, as he had expected the village was sleeping, with sentinels posted atop the hedge fortifications. But he spotted only two, and neither was looking his way. Floskin sidled to the hedge. The foot-long thorns made it perfectly easy to scale, and in moments he was over the top and down the other side. Crouching, he took stock. Tonight, the sky was cloudy, and few stars were visible. Of the terrain, there were only vague humps in the darkness. Still, he thought he could remember which way to go. He pulled at one of the sharpened stakes, which made the hedge bristle. It came out easily. Now he had a weapon. Silently, Imperial Guardsman Horton lopped off into the lightless unknown, intent on retrieving the honour of the Aurelian 15th. All that night, Floskin travelled, trying not to stray from his chosen direction, trying to suppress his fright. Clicking, buzzing, rattling noises sounded all around him. All too often, he thought he felt a chill touch, a claw, a feeler, a rasp, a feathery antenna, causing him to lash out with the stake in a sideways swipe or jab with the point, often followed by the sound of something scuttling away. Dawn found him weary. Something else found him too. He first became aware of it as a sharp, acid smell. Then it charged from behind a rock to attack him. It was about twice the size of a horse, but in appearance like a cockroach whose head was a mass of razor-sharp sword blades sliding in and out with a scything sound, rubbing against one another. At their full extent, they were as long as his stake. He took a lesson from Oktar. To retreat was death, therefore attack. He ran at the animal, which in turn was scurrying towards him, eager to slice him to bits with its battery of blades. Go for the brain. Oktar had taught him that too. A bubbling, whistling noise came from the creature as he pushed the stake in as hard as he could. Then it turned on its back, a dozen stubby legs waving in death agony. As he withdrew the stake, from which a purple goo dripped, a sensation of irresistible weight seized him. He looked at the icons and groaned. The Hygie suit had lost power. Floskin sank to his knees. Where was the village? The creature was but the first and smallest of the monsters that were likely to find him. Others would be gigantic, impossible to fight even with a fully functioning Hygie suit. Abandoning the stake, he was reduced to crawling on all fours as his own weight settled on him, dragging him into a pit of despair. Soon, even this was too much. He was forced to lie down and close his eyes in exhaustion. The sound of a human voice awoke him with a start. A quadruped stood over him, clad in a cloth tunic, lacking facial scars and tattoos, and with no claw-bearing helmet. One of Oktar's people. Floskin struggled to sit up. Had he made it out of the territory of the Blood God, or were the Remembering One's tribe looking for him after he had failed to return?
Oktar is dead. Blood God. They have messenger from the Emperor. Going to kill him,
Flosken pleaded. Had Oktar been the only one to understand Imperial Gothic? Had he taught it to any of the others? The quadruped looked at him, frowning.
Blood God, Emperor. Blood God, kill Emperor.
Yes, help, Emperor.
For the first time he noticed a large curved horn hanging from the foreleg's neck. The tribesman raised it to his lips and blew a long, winding blast. More warriors appeared among the crags and began making their way down to them. Flosken's guess seemed to have been correct. They were searching for Oktar and must have already been to the destroyed temple. The quadruped with the horn began bellowing commands, flinging out his arm in the direction Flosken had indicated. In moments, a small horde was racing for the village of the Blood God. A hand came down, helping Flosken up and onto a sturdy back. Heart exultant, he hung on for all his worth and realized that his limbs no longer seemed so heavy. Glancing at the high G icons, he grinned. The suit's photoelectric strips had been soaking up sunlight. The high G field was re-energized. For ferocity, the assault on the village would have done the Imperial Guard credit. Taken by surprise, the devotees of the Blood God forayed through the gate at first, attempting to defend their settlement outside its bounds, but they were soon driven back. The attacking warriors swarmed up over the hedge and down into the compound, climbing it as Flosken had. He mounted it too and watched from the top as axes rose and fell, spears jabbed, blood flowed. The Blood God's followers were fighting for their homes, fighting for their lives, fighting for their savage god, and they laid about them as if demented, their bestial roars filling the air. But Oktar's people were fighting for a god too, the Emperor. It was hard to say who would be the victor at this stage. It was as if the butchery would continue until there was almost no one left. Flosken chose his moment to drop into the compound and dodge his way to the prison hut, near the newly constructed oven, which he was glad to see had not been used yet. In the dim interior, Lamenkainen looked at him in wonderment. He did not even speak as the guardsman untied him and helped him to his feet, supporting his weight.
"We have been rescued, Commissar," Flosken yelled, "by four-legged men who are loyal to the Emperor. Did I not tell you?"
Lamenkainen's response was a look of sour disbelief and an emphatic shake of his head. Nevertheless, he allowed Flosken to guide him gingerly to the door. There, an extraordinary sight met their eyes. The fighting had all but stopped. Something had wrapped itself around the village. It was like a millipede, many hundreds of paces long, which had coiled around the circular hedge wall, though it overtopped it by nearly half its height, again. From each of its countless segments sprouted a pair of tentacles tipped with eyes, lashing down into the compound to pick up defenders and attackers alike, whipping them over the hedge to be devoured. Perhaps the smell of blood from the battle had attracted it. The spectacle seemed to send Lamenkainen into a frenzy. He pushed Flosken away from him and staggered through the doorway, forcing himself to stand erect.
"I must make my report. Order the exterminators. Guardsmen, if I am martyred, you must deliver this into the right hands."
From within his greatcoat, he whipped out a flat grey plate with a keypad. It was his personal log. Feverishly, he began typing, oblivious of what went on around him.
"Look out, Commissar!"
Flosken lunged to knock the Commissar aside, but it was too late. A slivering tentacle had seized him, pinning his arms to his body. With barely a heard gurgle, Lamenkainen was gone. Flosken snatched up the log plate as it fell to the dusty ground, nimbly avoiding a flailing tentacle as he did so. By now, the tribesmen were dealing with the millipede in their own fashion. They had set the hedge alight, but so intent was the beast on its feeding that it ignored the flames until it was too late. It, too, caught fire, writhing soundlessly, crushing huts in its agony, while an indescribably foul-smelling smoke filled the air. Everything in the village was burning now. Everything was being flattened as the blazing monster flexed and rolled, forcing villagers and invaders to flee as one for the exit or trample their way through the glowing cinders of the collapsing hedge. The battle forgotten. Flosken too was caught up in the stampeding rush. Out in the open, The two sides drew apart, glaring at one another. It was doubtful if they even remembered what they were fighting over, but they were ready to begin again. Then, a glinting movement high in the air made Floskin look up. His heart leapt. His prayer to the Emperor was answered. All around Floskin, four-legged men dropped to their knees. A large, shining metal shape was descending.
It was an Imperial shuttlecraft.
The Aurelian 15th Sol survivor handed this in, sir. It appears that Commissar Lamenkainen was making his last report when he was killed.
In his brass-ornamented cabin, Captain Gert Leider, commander of the battleship Ravenger, took the Commissar's data slate from his officer's hand. He noticed that the log was not closed. Lamenkainen had not even had time to finish the report or key in his code. He tapped a key and began to read. Emergency report by Commissar Lamiel Lamenkainen, LX-38974B, on unnamed planet in cluster FR-7891, in vicinity of warp gate 492. This planet is of no value to the Imperium. It is a feral world of the most extreme violence and would be very difficult to colonize. It contains a primitive, semi-intelligent alien species, unlikely to advance further. Recommend no action, particularly on account of. There, it ended. Who is the survivor? Captain Gert Leider asked.
Just a regular guardsman, sir. He was with Commissar Lamenkainen to the end. He appears to have acquitted himself well in difficult circumstances. I shall recommend his promotion when he is reassigned.
The captain handed back the data slate. Very well. See that this is passed on to the Administratum. Down in the crew quarters of the Ravenger, Guardsman Flosken Hartum was feeling very nervous indeed. Once aboard the battleship, he had contrived to be alone for a while. He could not resist taking a look at Commissar Lamenkainen's open log. Lamenkainen had opened the log using his personal code, but had got no further than the heading, stating time and place. The millipede creature had eaten him at that point. So Flosken, appalled at his own audacity, had made an entry of his own. He couldn't close the entry, of course, since he didn't know Lamenkainen's code, so he had left it in mid-sentence, hoping that made it look all the more authentic. He dreaded to think what would become of him if it was ever discovered that he had made a false entry in the Commissar's log. But he had realised that neither Lamenkainen nor any other agent of the Administratum would ever look favourably on the quadrupeds once their human ancestry was known. A mutant is a mutant. They had altered themselves too much. Well, now they would be registered as aliens and left alone. Flosken had already heard that Warp Gate 492 was to be marked as unusable on the charts, a deadly trap now that it had been discovered by the orcs, who must have been lurking nearby waiting for Imperial vessels to emerge. The planet would receive no more visitors. For the 100th time, he wondered if it was true that the Emperor saw everything. Did he know what Flosken had done? And did he approve or abhor Flosken for it? Flosken took it as a good sign that no one had questioned why he was wearing a hygiene suit. A war between good and evil was shaping up on the quadruped's planet. He hoped, of course, that the Blood God could be defeated. But whatever the outcome, it was going to be settled by the quadrupeds themselves. Though sadly, outside of the family of man. Thank you all very much for watching. If you wouldn't mind giving this video a like, I'd really appreciate that. Please subscribe if you're not subscribed and hit the bell so you get notified when I post a video or go live with a stream on something. This was an odd one because clearly this guy should have said, nah, the mutants need to die. There's like fragments of STC technology on this planet which can like unbelievably help the Imperium, but he's decided that four-legged mutants, I don't know. I can understand why you would think that, but I don't think he's seen the big picture. If you would like to support the channel and the stuff I do here, please consider using the links below, like these good gentlemen have here. Thank you very much, lads. Really appreciate your support. And if anyone would like to join them, like I say, there's links in the description below. Otherwise, I will see you next time. Thanks very much for watching. Cheers.